I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Go no further than last night's debate in California. In a real live, although scripted, debate that could help decide the governorship, well, what pops up in the morning news but two choice lines, one from a TV personality and another from an actor.
Let me finish. You know, this is completely impolite. This is the way you treat women. We know that, but not now.
I would just like to say that I just realized that I have a perfect part for you in Terminator 4. That's
it. All right, Connection listeners, hands up all those who think that Arnie and Ariana make this stuff up on the spot. Good. So we all agree on that. But Connection listeners, what about a weekly television show that has famous PR hacks playing themselves along with actors and, well, real-life senators and reporters all boiled up into some kind of inner beltway bouillabaisse? We're talking this hour about K Street. It's a new HBO weekly TV series that stars the image makers James Carville and Mary Madeline as image makers. And we'd like to know where you think this new program might fit into our current political landscape. Is it a dangerous venture that confuses even further the real from the surreal in national politics? Or is it a clever new way to make us all think about power? Who has it? How it's used? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And joining us to sort it all out is Stuart Stevens, co-producer of K Street. He's also a political consultant and one of the top image doctors in Washington. Stuart, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much.
So what are we trying to do here? Are we meant to be confused?
Well, I think the show is a new genre, and any new genre is confusing. I can't say that there's a rule book for this. I hope what you're meant to be is entertained. That would be certainly the primary goal of the show.
But did you listen to Arianna Huffington and Arnold Schwarzenegger this morning and think to yourself, geez, we could have had a camera out there as well?
Well, it was interesting because we had just finished our last shot last night, and then we all went back to our offices and watched the debate, the whole group of us. I thought, and we may do something on California yet. It's not over.
You make these decisions pretty well on the fly. Like, you don't really know. I mean, you know what's going to be on this weekend, but you don't know what you're doing the weekend after that?
This is much more like a weekly news magazine in its conceit than a television drama. We sit down on Monday mornings and have what would be akin to an editorial meeting and try to decide what to do for this week. And then try to shoot that day, Monday afternoon, Monday evening, shoot Tuesday, shoot Wednesday. And then Stephen goes into edit hell on Thursday and emerges Friday sometime with the finished product.
No script?
There's never been a script, no, which is both exciting and terrifying.
I was going to say, that's about as high on the wire as you can get.
Yes.
Now, for the people who haven't seen it, I want to talk about one particular part of the first episode, which got a lot of attention because it kind of focuses in on just where you cross those lines. Former Clinton political strategist in the first episode, Paul Begal and James Carville, are prepping the real Democratic candidate, Howard Dean, for that evening's debate sponsored by the Congressional Black Caucus. Let's just listen in on a part of the first episode of K Street.
But here's the biggest difference between me and all the other candidates on here that are white. I'm the only white person I've ever heard talk about race in front of white audiences.
I would particularly on something like that, it's one of the few times you've made a personal reference. If you're comfortable telling us more about that, that'd be great. In other words, South Bronx, you probably actually, you know, were looking up to people the rest of folks look down on in New York City as their doctor and trying to help them.
You get the Vermont question. Say, look, if the percentage of black folks in your state was determined to be your record on civil rights, then Trent Lott would be Martin Luther King.
And guess what, Connection listeners? When Howard Dean stood before the cameras at the September 10th Morgan State University debate in Baltimore, he said that very line, which came from the program. Now, did you know, Stuart, that he was going to say that?
Oh, Lord, no. This is as real as it gets. The show contacted the Dean campaign and said, would you like to do a debate prep with Begal and Carville? They said yes. The debate prep was set up for Monday afternoon before the Tuesday debate. It was the longest debate prep. I'm not sure exactly how long I wasn't there. no script to that. I mean, we certainly didn't try to tell James and Paul what to say. They've done this a zillion times before. They're probably the best that the Democrats have. And then we had no idea what the governor would say in the debate. I mean, we didn't know if the question would be asked. I mean, no one knew what the questions were. So there's no way to script anything like this. And the reaction that you see of James and Mary Matlin, which was they were both watching the debate separately, was filmed concurrent with the governor using that line. So is this as real as...
So we're watching James and Mary react to the line when it's actually used in the debate.
Yes.
If you're pointing cameras at those two, you've got to have a pretty good idea that maybe something's going to happen in the debate that'll give K Street something it can work with, right?
You know, one of the interesting aspects of this is in a documentary style, and the fact that we're shooting video, not film, right. So the costs are almost nothing. We film everything. You know, we'll shoot random things and just let the cameras run. There's three cameras. Steven Soderbergh always shoots first camera. George Clooney pretty much always shoots second camera. Then there's a couple of fabulous cameramen. So we roll a lot. It's cheap and it's easy. And when you're doing a show every week, you always need more stuff.
Now, not so long ago, the Rules and Means and Ways or whatever it is, the committee of the Senate said, well, that's enough of this nonsense. You're not going to be allowed in places where there are news conferences. You were kind of shut out of some of the places where you might like to have been doing your filming, right?
Well, actually, there's sort of some confusion over that. There's been a longstanding rule, which I think makes a lot of sense, that commercial enterprises, and HBO is a commercial enterprise, can't film in congressional offices, Senate offices, the Capitol. Because if they didn't have that rule, everybody would want to do it. And so then you'd have to get into the business of saying, well, these people can do it and these people can't do it, which would be a nightmare for everybody. So this is a longstanding rule that was simply sort of reemphasized when the show came around because, you know, left to our own devices, sure, we'd wander around congressional offices bugging everybody.
And it doesn't mean that you're not going to be able to continue on.
Oh, Lord, no. Our show's about the people, not the places. And, you know, these senators and congressmen and staffers, they're used to shooting campaign ads and doing interviews like this in other locations all the time. So this is very normal to them. So somebody saying, well, you know, let's do this on the street or let's do this at the Folger Theater. Let's do it in front of the Supreme Court. That's all fun.
There is, though, something very peculiar about watching people who are known to both insiders and outsiders, people like Mary Matlin and James Carville, arguing about the type of work they're going to do because if there's no script, we're left wondering whether or not it's the sort of argument that would be happening anyway or something that they're doing for the K Street cameras.
Well, we find it mind-boggling, too. We often find it difficult to separate the real from the not real. You know, the conceit of the show is to take real people and place them in situations which are part of their daily lives, part of the daily news stream, and capture them as they would react. So whenever we shoot a senator or a congressman or a candidate like Governor Dean, we never tell them what to say. Usually they say, well, what do you want me to do here? And Steven Soderbergh always says, well, what would you do? We just want you to react however you would react. And like a news story, that often their reaction, which is unpredictable, will lead us in a different direction. It's sort of like when you start to write a long news story, you don't really know where you're going to end up, and where the story takes you is where you end up. And we are very much in that mode.
We have a new firm. We have to outfit it. We have to feed our children. You
what
can't
you
make decisions
about?
Like that.
Dean
is not just a Democrat. Dean is a Democrat who has interests and positions exactly contrary to clients we have sitting on the fence.
I wouldn't be James Carville if I turned a guy down because you thought might be somebody else. I mean,
that's such a stretch. You are an addict. You need professional help.
Look,
this is about Florida. This is about Florida. It's ridiculous.
You know what it is? It's about business. It's
about Florida, isn't it?
Over it.
Should we count again? Should we recount again?
There you
go. This is about Florida.
That also from the very first episode of K Street. You must have been having fun just watching that unfold in front of you.
I love that, yes.
Here's a question, though, for people who aren't insiders, who don't know the faces, who might not know that the suit on the screen at that particular right. moment is Rick Santorum or Orrin Hatch. Now, there's a word in television that you use to describe the little white letters that pop up at the bottom of the screen, right, that we see on CNN. What are those?
Chyrons or signage.
Yeah. Now, you right. specifically don't use that. So some high-powered senator is going to appear on the screen talking to one of your actors or one of your not-so-actors and then disappear without ever kind of tipping us in. You know who that was, right?
Well, our theory about this is that even though you may not know who they are, you have a sense of what they are by the context of the show. So even if you don't know that, say, you know, Rick Santorum is the junior senator from Pennsylvania who was elected in 1994, you have a sense that here is a guy who is important and someone's coming to him, Maggie's coming to him for advice. So that it works on multiple levels, given the context of the show.
But what's the difference between having that real senator or someone who's dressed in an expensive suit playing a real senator? How does that change the dynamic of the program?
Well, it's more textured, we think, and more real to have someone who, a senator, who's in that situation, who is responding as he would like to respond. And I think one of the ways the show has been and will continue to be successful in getting people on the show who are real people is that it gives them a chance to say whatever they want to say. look, you know, we're talking about, you know, mission to Mars. You can like, take NASA's head off. You can say it's, like, the most important thing in the world. We don't care. Just tell us what you think.
Stuart Stevens, co-producer of the HBO reality series K-Street. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. Let's take a call from Nashville, Tennessee. Eric's joining us. Hi, Eric.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. Have you seen the program?
I've seen both episodes so far.
What do you think?
Well, I think it's great. Having worked in Washington and worked on political campaigns for many years, I think it's excellent because it does focus on the people and the issues more so than the over-sensationalization of things that go on in Washington.
And what? And the way and how the people exercise the power? Is that what you...
Well, no, I think the beauty of the show is that the entertainment value comes from the interplay of the characters and not so much from grand sweeping ideas or grand sweeping issues that they're working on. And that, to me, was always what Washington was always about, was, you know, the little interplay between K Street and then, you know, the Congress and all the consultants.
So quick last question, Eric. If you were once inside the Beltway, do you watch the show trying to figure out who's on the program?
I do, and I guess one question I would have is I'm not exactly sure who is an actor and who is not. I mean, I know, you know, the political figures, but the folks within the firm, I'm not sure who's an actor and who's not.
I don't think we're meant to know, are we, Stuart? Entirely?
it's our goal to blur those lines very much. I think that's interesting. But, you know, James Carville and Mary Matlin play themselves, and then there are three other members of the firm who are the principals are actors. Though probably by the end of the show,
they'll be hired as political consultants. I
need
to stop.
And
you
James and Mary will become actors and go to Hollywood.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, if you have seen K Street, tell us what you think about the way that it's opening an eye on a part of Washington that may not have been seen that much before. And if you haven't seen it, what do you think about Stewart's notion of blurring the lines between what's real and what's not? Or do the lines even exist anymore? 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. We're talking about K Street this hour, brand new program on HBO that takes a look at that part of Washington, the image makers, the high-priced lawyers, the lobbyists, those who try to use their own muscle to have their way with the politicians, and a program that's mixing up the reporters and the actors and the real politicians in a way to try and get us to understand how power is exercised there. Stuart Stevens is with us. He's a co-producer of K Street and author also of a book called The Big Enchilada: Campaign Adventures with a Cockeyed Optimist from Texas, who won the biggest prize in politics, an insider's view of the 2000 election from the campaign trail. We're joined now from a studio also in Washington by Gail Chadwick, our Eye on Capitol Hill, Christian Science Monitor congressional correspondent. Gail, nice to have you on the program.
Good to be here.
Now, whether you like it or not, Gail, you're also a bit of an insider here because you get to, I mean, you know who some of these faces popping up in K Street are, and you're probably getting jokes that I miss and other people are missing. What do you think of the way that these folks are trying to explore some new territory?
Well, I think it's potentially a very interesting concept, especially if they actually get beyond the world of political consultants, which I think the public knows a lot about. I mean, Jim Carville is more recognizable than most of the people he represents, especially coming off of a movie like The War Room about the Clinton campaign. But I think that the what's potentially interesting about the story is if it can make inside policy issues more interesting to the public. I was struck by this once. I'd just written a story on the census, very difficult to make that an interesting issue to people. And the West Wing had an episode, right, lasted maybe two or three minutes, and gave a much clearer account of the politics of the issue than I had, which gave me some modest appreciation of what television could do on these issues.
But what about that messy area where, as viewers, we're trying to figure out what's real or what's not, whether or not an argument with the recording industry is actually something that's unfolding on television or something that's unfolding in Washington. If that line's blurred, do we get lost or do we get drawn in, Gail?
Well, I think the issue that you started the show with, Governor Dean's appearance, is a very good one to look at, because the problem here isn't so much the blurring of public and private, but it raises questions in the public's mind about what his motivation was. I mean, here's someone who represents himself as an outsider, using a line given to him on a television show by an insider.
But he's a grown-up. I mean, this is a man who, you know, has lots of paid advisors hanging around him right now, Gail, saying, I don't know, should we do K Street? Should we not do K Street? Is it good? Is it bad? It's like Al Gore doing Saturday Night Live. You know, will it help? Won't it help?
Or Nixon saying, sock it to me on
laughing
back in 68.
Yeah.
Politicians are really pushing the envelope on this. I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger announces his candidacy on Jay Leno's show. You know, this is people go to where the attention that the celebrity is. They go where the lights are.
Right.
But in that process, it leaves in the public thought, what am I watching here? Is Orrin Hatch a senator, you know, representing the public of Utah, or is he trying to make a pitch for his latest Christmas CD, which, you know, is an issue that was raised by his appearance in the second episode of that show. Do senators see themselves as entertainers? Are they seduced by celebrity, or are they there working for us? You know, it's a sort of question that has to be raised in public thought.
Well, Stuart, join us on this because you're in the business of working on people's images. You're not coming at this just from a totally ironic, sarcastic, politicians will do anything if you dangle something in front of them motivation. What's going on from the other side of the camera?
You know, I think it's fascinating because I remember in 92, and I'm a big Republican, you know, we all thought that Clinton was nuts as a bunny to go on Arsenio and play the saxophone and go on these talk shows. And, you know, by the end of the campaign, you know, we would have done any of that. because, you know, they were right and we were wrong. And people liked it because it was part of the cultural mix. You know, I've never known a candidate to go on Saturday Night Live or a politician to go on Saturday Night Live and not do themselves some good. People loved it when Senator Dole went on Saturday Night Live. He'd probably be president today if he'd only campaigned on Saturday Night Live. Because people, I think, are very sophisticated about this. And what they hate most is someone who is stuffy and does take themselves too seriously. But, you know, the unique thing about K Street is that if you take the Orrin Hatch situation, we go to him about the recording industry, we never tell these people what to say. And there's always this fascinating moment when Steven Soderbergh, the director, is in these situations, says, okay, well, this person's going to come to you. And they say, well, you know, they usually say something like, well, okay, what do you want me to do? And they say, well, do whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm. Say whatever you would say. And in that sense, it's completely natural and gives, I think, the politicians or whoever's on the show a chance to say whatever in the world they want to say. And that's pretty rare to go across unfiltered like that.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Let's go to Harvard, Massachusetts, and Fred's joining us. Hi, Fred.
Hi. I really enjoy the concept of this program, although I haven't seen it, and I believe it marks a further step towards the commercialization or the consumerization is what I really mean, consumerization of the political process. Politics has always been a spectator sport. Now politics is becoming the entertainment. That does not demean politics per se. I think it merely opens it up to more participation by people at many different levels, levels of intellect and levels of...
So you're saying it's a good thing, Fred. You're not saying it's a bad thing, right?
I think that's correct. To the extent that it confuses people, it may be unfortunate, but I think people will sort that out in a while. People will begin to understand what is real and what isn't and what the implications are for these people that are appearing. Are they real politicians? Are they joshing with us? Are we going to vote for them? You have to ask all those questions simultaneously.
Gail, what do you think? That when we talk about it as the consumerization of politics, do you think that the voters and the viewers are becoming sophisticated at the same pace here?
Oh, well, I think the horse has been out of the barn on that one for a very long time. But my problem with the show is something like the moment when James Carville looks at the camera and says, Howard Dean's office called us, you know, they want us to, prep him for the show. Not true. But how would the public know that, since he then went and actually used a line, you know, on the right. show? You know, you have to ask the question, why are these people there? I actually think, going back to a point you raised earlier, too, the question, who are these people, is important. I mean, there are, 535 members of Congress up there. I've been on the Hill for several years, and learning the faces is the hardest part of the job. Mm-hmm. I don't think people knew that was David Dreyer, head of the Rules Committee, the most powerful right. committee in the House, sitting in the back of that car. The lighting was so bad, I barely knew it was him. Oh, I've seen him many times.
So in the recording industry episode, the guy who's talking in the back seat of the car...
David right. Dreyer.
Is,
David Dreyer.
And one of the people who is in line to replace Jack Valenti, right?
Exactly.
So deep inside.
Oh, that's Scuttlebutt. Who knows?
Yeah, okay. We won't say it on
the radio.
We'd
like to do an episode on it if it's true.
Oh, Jack Valenti is someone you definitely need on this show.
Well, we hope you'll come on the show, Gail.
Absolutely not.
We want to get journalists on the show.
No.
You have a problem with that, Gail? I mean, the idea of Howard Kurtz popping up in a Starbucks scene?
No. I think for me that would be a disaster for some funny reasons. Well, you haven't seen me on television. That's one thing. But I think it is especially important for journalists to retain whatever shred of credibility we still have, which isn't much. And if people ever thought that, you know, what we really wanted to be was, an entertainer, we'd be in trouble. I even think Howard Kurtz, who frankly is one of the most credible guys in this town, had, some problematic moments on that. Because this is episode 2 for people that haven't seen it. He's being approached by one of the actors on the show to write a story that favors the firm's position. And he says something like, well, I'm not going to carry your water bucket on this one, suggesting, do you do it for other people on other issues? You know, is that how the system works, that journalists basically, carry water for lobbyists? It's a problem. Problem for us. Our credibility is lower than that of a used car salesman. We can't afford to do anything to make it worse.
I want to bring in another voice here. Alan Hoffman's been listening along. He's a vice president of Timmons & Company, which is the oldest lobbying firm in Washington, D.C. And Alan, I think in your last incarnation, you were chief of staff for Senator Joe Biden. Is that right?
That is correct. Great to be here with you.
And so you go from someone who's holding all this political power to someone who's holding all this lobbying power. Where's the real juice?
The real juice is in shows like K Street that everyone's watching all across America and trying to figure out what Washington's all about. I think we're all part of the system, to be honest with you. I think whether you're a journalist or you're doing shows for fun on HBO or a lobbyist or working on the Hill, we're all part of the democratic process and trying to influence decisions that are made by staff and decisions that are being made by senators of the United States.
Do you get a sense, Alan, that a program like K Street can shine a light on the way that power is used and exercised in Washington, perhaps in a way that we haven't seen before?
Well, I do. I think it's a very realistic show. It's probably, you know, a friend of mine said to me yesterday, more realistic than The West Wing. I mean, you have no script. You have real stories. I mean, the story dealing with the RIAA and Mitch Bainwall is something that, you know, I'm dealing with here, you know, on a day-to-day basis. And the issues that you're dealing with, whether you are on the Hill or working on K Street where I am, are very realistic, and they give a perspective to my father down in Florida or, you know, my friend out in California.
Now, you watch that with a different eye than I would watch that, because like Gail and Stuart, you've got a way better Rolodex of faces. Is there a bit of a, I can hardly wait till they shoot in my office or appear outside my building when I happen to be walking by?
Well, listen, we're all starstruck. You know, when George Clooney walks down the street or plays basketball in my gym, you know, every woman in America wants to be there. The guys are all envious, and, you know, we deal with it the way we can. I would love to be on the show, but, you know, I have too much hair. You know, James Carville, you know, steals the show. But it's, you know, yes, it's exciting. It's exciting to be part of it. But as someone said previously in the show, you know, we're used to camera crews all over the place. We're used to news crews. And we're not so starstruck here that we can't continue going on with our day-to-day routines.
Alan, what's the scuttlebutt about what's coming up in this next episode? Has the street already got it figured out?
Well, I understand it's going to be a story about Saudi Arabia. I mean, I understand they picked the topic on Monday and filmed that week. But, you know, whether or not the firm should take on a client, Mary last week was lamenting the fact that they have no paying clients and they need to put their kids in some fancy private school, as Mary would do. And it's an interesting twist on whether or not they should take the government of Saudi Arabia as a client. It is something that I would have, you know, discussed with my partners, and I'm sure you'll see a very heated debate amongst the characters in the show. And I have one question. Who is Francois Dupri guy? I mean, he's probably the most intriguing character on the show.
The Algerian.
Yes. Everybody wants to know, what's the deal with this guy making mysterious phone calls on the street wearing a trench coat? He's a great character.
Maybe you guys are all mysterious to people who are watching from outside the Beltway. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Stuart, has he got it right? Saudi Arabia, is that what's happening?
Well, you know, one of the interesting aspects of the show is that we shoot a lot of stuff, and then Stephen goes into the edit, and the honest truth is we don't really know what's going to emerge. It's sort of like waiting outside the waiting room, hoping that, you know, baby doesn't come out with two heads.
Oh, that's like saying you don't know what the exit polls are now. Come on. What's the...
Well, listen, this is no different than putting together a news magazine. It's on Wednesday night. We don't know what's going to be on the cover on Friday. Yeah. So we'll have to see.
Will we see more of Francois Dupri?
Oh, I think Francois is a very intriguing character. There's some dispute over whether or not he is Algerian. But we're going to try to get to these passport issues. There may be, like, you know, some green card problems he has or something. You know, we'll have to get to the bottom of it.
1-800-423-8255 to Ipswich, Massachusetts. Now, Steve's with us. Hi, Steve.
Dick, thanks.
Yeah, go ahead.
What I wanted to ask of Mr. Stevens was, what seems to make the program provocative and interesting is that the politicians are going to present themselves in a sort of off-the-cuff informal
right.
way, but how long is it going to take for their handlers to start teaching them how to perform for K Street so that they can manipulate that format like they manipulate all the other formats to their advantage?
No, it's a great question.
If
you've got people lining up to say, oh, you want to put my senator on K Street, mm-hmm. then you've kind of become what you didn't want to be in the first place, right? Just another vehicle for the politicians.
Well, the difference is that this is really, again, you know, we never tell these people what to say. Or what opinions to hold, or, you know, and
but
and
that's even more dangerous, isn't it, Stuart? If you're not telling them what to say, they show up and they start campaigning, or they're talking for their bill. I mean, sure enough,
that's
you
okay
get...
with us. That's fine with us. We like that. We like people to talk about what they're interested in, their pet projects, whatever. We think that's great because that's very much what they do. It's what they do when they are interviewed by news people or mm-hmm. they go out and they talk to people. And I think that's why one of the reasons a lot of people do want to get on the show and will continue to get on the show, because, look, here you have a chance. You can talk about an issue and say whatever you want to say.
And Gail, as a reporter, hearing those same pitches from senators or whoever, you get to edit out all the chaff and go after what it is that you want. That's what makes you a news reporter. If the folks for K Street are editing out what they want and choosing what they want, are we going to get a little bit lost between your editorial decisions and their entertainment decisions?
No, I think what happens is that they lose what is the most promising aspect of their show by staying with the surface. I mean, what's interesting about the show is that it's not, Capitol Hill, it's K Street, this right. shadowy world that the public doesn't know much about. K Street is where much of the money flows into the political system. It's where, you know, the real issues, the line that will mean $100 million for a corporation is slipped into a bill. That's what I hoped would come out of this. I mean, Saudi Arabia is, of course, a very interesting subject. But look what's going on in Capitol Hill this week. Day by day, this energy conference is dribbling out little bits and pieces of the most comprehensive energy reform in over a decade. And it's being written, you know, straight out of K Street. Mm-hmm. Tell us something about that. You have sitting on the show Mary Matlin, who did a superb job trying to deflect criticism of the vice president's energy task force. She probably knows things that the General Accounting Office couldn't get out. You know, this has been a big issue in Washington. What, you know, who really determined the substance of that bill? I'd love to see them do that issue. I'd love to hear her talk about it.
Well, when we come back after the break, we'll ask Stuart to talk specifically about the public service aspect of a program like this. I mean, is it really just looking at the glitter in Gucci Gulch, or is it a little bit more about digging in, understanding how it is that the phrasing of a line in an energy bill can mean so many millions of dollars to companies all the way around the world? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. We're trying to understand K Street this hour on The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from NPR. Listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. I'm Dick Gordon. Our number is 1-800-423-TALK, and this hour, talk about K Street, the television show, and the K Street itself, and what one is teaching us about the other. Stuart Stevens, the people whose brains are behind the program, people like you who are, you know, a political consultant and in the business of massaging a person or a message to a point where I accepted a certain way, or Michael Deaver or James or Mary, we've been talking about it. I mean, I would look at your CVs and think that when Gail asks about the public service aspect of the program, it's like, yeah, no, we're not doing that. We're, you know, in the business of manipulating things. So what, can it be both?
I'm not sure. I think that, you know, our first goal is to entertain, to be honest. It is on HBO. It's not on CNN. And it's very much a show that I think, as it continues, will be increasingly character-driven. I think people are interested in people, and I think that's right. One of the major reasons, if the show succeeds, which I think it will, that these characters are compelling and that their lives are compelling and the dramas are around them. They're sort of interesting people. Now, part of that is a combination with the process show, and it is very much a process show. I think Gail was correct in saying that the process of K Street and the way it interacts with Capitol Hill is something that's fascinating. I believe that people are interested in big forces in their lives and the real story behind them, and that's why you get – K Street is really a second-generation political show if you consider West Wing a first generation. West Wing is more Dr. Kildare. This is more ER. You know, West Wing would be more sort of Dragnet. This is more NYPD Blue. And it, in that sense, is it's a very unprocessed show. You know, there's no makeup, there's no lights. So, and there's no script, which we all find terrifying. And fascinating at the same time. So I hope it'll have that quality of realness to it. And cumulatively, as the show goes on, you will learn by these people sort of what their lives are like and more about the process of Washington.
All right, let's go back to the calls. 1-800-423-8255. Charleston, South Carolina. Bill's joining us. Hi, Bill.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
K Street is fantastic, and I heard the comment a few minutes ago, the question, do senators consider themselves entertainers, and almost drove off the road laughing. Well, yeah, of course they do. And I ran for Congress. I was my party's nominee like 10 years ago, and even back then, in the South, it's always been the case. From pre-Civil War times, the thing that gets you elected is what entertains people, and your information has to be presented in an entertaining style. Everybody knows that. And
But wait a second here, though, Bill. Are we talking about, you know, the ability of someone like William Jennings Bryan to rip off a really good speech or his skill as a juggler?
There's no difference. That's my point. There's no difference. Everyone knows this. If we know it in South Carolina, the whole world knows it. So K Street's right on the mark. Of course senators consider themselves entertainers. That's why they're there. Some good is done in the process. But you get any senator behind closed doors, and he understands that what he's doing is 100% entertainment.
Gail Chadwick, let me hear from you here.
Well, I think there have been some remarkable Southern politicians/entertainers, but I'll tell you the terrible flash to non-Washingtonians, but when you walk around the Capitol, you are not overwhelmed at how wonderfully everyone's dressed, how articulate they are, or how entertaining. I mean, it's a sort of Talbot's kind of place, you know. Everyone is wearing gray, and, you know, they're not terribly articulate. I would say most people wouldn't want to watch most senators for more than a minute and a half, if that, for their entertainment value. But I think the issue I was raising is more on the edge than that. It's not that they aren't capable of holding an audience. They've got to do that. You're right. But what's their motive? I mean, do they just crave attention? And would they, in a second, jump over to a movie career if they could? I mean, Fred Thompson's shift, although he came from, this guy's great at everything, legal, acting, a senator, and then he goes back to be on a TV show. I mean, it's that segue out of public service that makes you wonder, are they there simply because they crave, you know, celebrity? Or are there real issues that are driving them as they tell the public every election cycle?
I think that most senators would be bored to death being actors. I think the notion that, you know, they would wake up in the morning and give lines given to them by somebody else would drive them absolutely nuts.
Well, that's exactly what Arnold Schwarzenegger did this morning. Come on now. I mean, you know, a part of it is following
Arnold
a script.
Arnold is a slightly different case. But I think there's a difference between having someone help you with lines, as, you know, John Kennedy did with his fabulous writers. Difference in that and playing a role. And in K Street, we don't want people to play roles. We want them to play themselves. And if they're in a good mood, great. If they're in a bad mood, great. If they're angry about this, great. We'll get it. If you know, they've got an axe to grind, use K Street to grind away. We like that. We think that's interesting. And it's in that sense, it's very unfiltered. The show, I think, successfully has no ideological edge. It's not something even is really ever brought up in discussions. So
let me ask you something, though, Stuart. Yeah. Do you want to make news, so-and-so said such-and-such on K Street, as a way of selling the program or as a way of making news?
I think that's very difficult to predict. I think if we do make news, it's probably a good thing.
In selling the program, sure.
Sure, in getting attention, but it's not a design of the show. And I think, you know, if you take the case of Governor Dean, they did a real debate prep, James and Paul did. And I've been in a million of these debate preps, so I wasn't in that one. And you never know what a candidate takes out of a debate prep. You don't know what the questions are. You know, James had no way of knowing whether or not that question was going to be asked. No one on those three great journalists at the Congressional Black Caucus debate didn't come to us asking questions. What should I ask? So you never know. And we were as surprised as everybody else that that sort of moment was replicated in the debate.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255 to Louisville, Kentucky now. Mike's joining us. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how is everyone?
Good. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
I have a question. You guys are just starting to touch on it.
And, all right.
Stuart said earlier, you know, I'm a big Republican and blah, 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 blah. And I'm wondering, you know, there is a pretty big, it sounds like there's a pretty big camera presence and there's a lot of shooting going on. And then Thursday is the editorial hell, he was saying. But how do we, the viewers, know when their production bias starts or stops? I mean, how do we know if Stuart the Republican or, I don't know, if Clooney is Republican or Democrat or whatever, but how do we know when the production bias creeps into the final product? I mean, you know, we're seeing a very entertaining show, but a lot of people may take that as a sort of face value DC world and say, well, yeah, this is how our country is run, and it's being presented by a group of people who may all be Democrats, they may all be Republicans, they may all be atheists who don't care. But, you know, what's the sort of rationale behind how the product gets delivered?
Stuart, you start on this. I want to hear Gail as well.
Well, I think it's you'll know it when you see it. It's like pornography. If you think the show's biased, then perhaps it is biased. I think we've been successful so far in not having really any axe to grind or any ideological edge. I don't think that's a show that's designed to do that. It doesn't really have a point of view in that sense, deliberately. It's deliberately neutral. And there's a very agnostic mix of Republicans and Democrats who are kind of fanatical on both sides.
By design, though, did you make sure, okay, are we not going to, you know, be seen to be going too hard on the issue from a Republican side or a Democratic side?
I think that there was a deliberate attempt to try to get a mix of Democrats and Republicans just so that this would sort of balance itself out. They don't want to tell one side of the story. But the conceit of the show was almost an anti-ideological conceit, because I don't think K Street has ideology. K Street has clients, and we hopefully will have viewers.
The ideology of K Street is money.
Exactly.
Gail, what do you think, Gail, about how we interpret bias in a program like this? I mean, I reflect back on older episodes of West Wing and can see, you know, Aaron Sorkin's Democratic bias fingerprints all over that program, and they didn't, in fact, go much out of their way to try and disguise that.
Well, I think you just stand back and take the show on its own terms. Is this, you know, Washington from the inside? They devoted a whole episode to the Recording Industry Association of America. Stand back and say, what did you learn from the show? Mm. Well, you learned that it was a public relations disaster to try to arrest a 12-year-old. And it was so bad that, you know, the recording industry probably needs some professional help that didn't quite come together by the end of the show. What you didn't hear is that Capitol Hill, for the last, you know, at least since the early 90s, has been, actually longer than that, has been collapsing public space. They constantly extend copyrights. You know, Mickey Mouse did not come into the public domain the last time he could, nor did any Gershwin or Cole Porter songs. You know, what's the consequence for the public of that? I mean, there are larger issues on the whole, you know, internet piracy that I think could have been brought out that didn't.
Right,
so I think that's the only way to answer the question of the ideological bias. Just see what you've learned about politics at the end and what's missing.
And don't take it all from K Street. Look somewhere else. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio to Yarmouth, Massachusetts. Now Ben's with us. Hi, Ben.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment that the entertainment is not so much that the politicians do this, but it's required by our populace. The problem is we have a people who want to be entertained and are more interested in batting averages than in voting records. This is where the real problem is. They haven't understood that an election is a qualification contest and not a popularity contest.
So how far do you go with this, Ben? Are you saying that nobody's going to pay any attention to what the president's saying unless he's wearing a flight suit?
Well, it sometimes almost seems like that, doesn't it?
Stuart?
Oh, I think drama has always been part of politics. I mean, I think the President of the United States appearing on a carrier is today's equivalent of a Torchlight speech. Drama is always essential. I think we're drawn to drama. I think we like drama. I think that anything that gets people involved in politics, for my money, is a good thing. I mean, you've got K Street, and which is a half hour every week, and you got C-SPAN, which is, you know, right there. Watch it, you know, till your eyes fall off. So I think that there's lots of different sources now of this stuff. And the Internet, of course, gives you a primary source. You can go and look at these voting records. So I think more is better.
But isn't the drama inherent in politics, though, potentially the undoing of a program like K Street? Because at one level, if we look at politics as a game for grown-ups, the drama is already there in Washington. It's real. It unfolds every day. You can read about it. You can watch it on the news. And then you come in this kind of interesting space where you're going to play a little bit with the real drama but introduce some of your own drama. And I'm wondering if the center circle of the three-ring circus isn't always going to be slightly more interesting than what you get to do with it.
Well, you know, I think that one of the lessons that people involved in politics, and Gail may share this, I'm not sure, is that actually, you know, these people are pretty uncynical in a lot of ways. That mm-hmm. it's actually, you know, people trying to do good. And I think that's true of a lot of elected officials, majority of elected officials on both sides of the aisle. And I think it's actually more true than even, you know, people involved in the K Street process. I mean, I think that a lot of these people are working on issues that they actually believe in. Now, politics is the art of compromise. You never get what you want. So I think one of the great surprises of Washington that hopefully we'll be able to sort of chip away at is the fact that, you know, people here do care about things and they do care about issues. And it's not just about the money, though money is part of the driving force on K Street.
Stuart, good luck with the show.
Thanks very much.
Stuart Stevens, co-producer of K Street. Gail Chadwick, nice to have you with us again.
Thank you.
Gail Chadwick, Capitol Hill correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. Earlier in the program, we talked with Alan Hoffman, vice president of Timmons & Company. That's a lobbying firm based in Washington, D.C. Our intern this week is Sarah Legan. Our senior producer is Tara Murphy. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Have you seen the little biggies crawling in the dirt? And for all the little piggies, life is getting worse. Always having dirt to play around in. Have you seen the bigger piggies in the starched white shed? You will find the bigger piggies stirring up the dirt. Always have clean shirts to play around.